This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up, we'll look at a new report by the Partnership for Strong Communities. It says there still isn't enough affordable housing in Connecticut. We'll also talk about how Rapid Rehousing is working to find stable homes for the homeless, and we'll play the new online rent roulette game. Step right up and just try to find an affordable apartment in the state. You can find that online at WNPR.org. But first, people just love lists and rankings. I mean, how many top 10s and top 100s do you see each week? These lists, often done for fun, take on a pretty serious turn when it comes to ranking things that hit close to home, like colleges or hometowns. For years, Connecticut Magazine has taken on the daunting task of rating the towns in Connecticut, a tricky proposition when you have 169 fiercely independent communities that are so very, very different. In the past, the magazine sorted the towns into categories based on population, which invariably meant those wealthier towns came out on top. This year, the contest is based on average home price, and that means some surprising winners. You can join the conversation. What's important to you when looking for a town? 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive at WNPR.org, or you can tweet us at wherewelive. Ben Duty is managing editor at Connecticut Magazine and sister publications here in Connecticut. And Connecticut Magazine has been doing this for quite some time. But, Ben, this is a brand new thing for this Rating the Towns edition. So as it comes out, we're pleased to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me on.
So, first of all, you've changed the way that you rank the towns. Why'd you do this, first of all, before we get into the methodology?
Sure. So I'm flipping here through our Rating the Towns issue in 2011. The way we've done this in the past is every other year we rated the big towns, which basically means anything above 10,000 in population. Every other year we rank the small, very small towns, 10,000 and below. So in 2011, which is the last time we did the majority of the towns that came out on top of the rankings, Greenwich, Westport, Ridgefield, and Weston.
And so these are grouped based on population, and those are the towns that would lead the top of each of those groupings.
Exactly. And so invariably, the wealthy towns, mostly in Fairfield County, come up in first place, and lower income towns across the board are at the bottom of the rankings. So we didn't think that was really a fair assessment. We thought it was kind of an apples to oranges comparison. And we also thought, if you're looking for a place to live in Connecticut, or anywhere else for that matter, you don't go and say, I want to live in a town with 50,000 or more people. Or you don't go in and say, I really want a town with a population of 25 to 50,000. You're much more likely to say, this is my budget. This is what I can afford. And so I'm going to look at what I can get for $300,000 I'm going to spend in a house.
Well, and of course, this is why these town rankings actually do come into play when people are looking for towns. Because, yeah, maybe they're looking for a place they can afford, but they're looking for quality of life. They're looking for a good school district. And these are some of the things that you actually rank the towns on. So maybe you can explain the data sets that you use in order to rank these towns once you get them in these groupings.
Sure. So we've used essentially the same data that we've always used. We've made a couple of relatively minor tweaks. But the data is it's in a couple of different categories. It's in education, economy, crime, culture and leisure. And this year we split culture and leisure into sort of two categories, the regular culture leisure category. And we also created a new civic engagement category. With a couple of things that had been bundled in with culture and leisure, we thought they sort of belonged in their own group. And civic engagement is simple. It's voter turnout in 2012 election. And we also looked at what people's access is to local news, which varies pretty wildly throughout different parts of the state, just so that if you're somebody who wants to know everything that your local RTM or your local Board of Selectmen is doing, are you going to be able to read about it, hear about it, talk about it, and are you going to be in a community where people are engaged, where people are voting, and so forth?
So a town that has one of these hyper-local sites, somebody that's just covering that town would rank a little higher in terms of civic engagement, theoretically.
Sure. So I'll give you an example. I live in Fairfield, which has not one, not two, but three weekly newspapers. It also is in the core coverage area of the Connecticut Post in Bridgeport. It has two universities right there, which are also covering the town. So there's an astonishing amount of local news available in Fairfield. if you're just a town or two over in Easton or Weston or Reading, for instance, you might have a patch site and some coverage in a daily newspaper, one weekly newspaper, but not the kind of saturation of local news that you're going to get in Fairfield or maybe even in a place like New Haven.
So what's the data that you're looking at when you say rank according to education? What exactly are you comparing town to town?
So, to be clear up front on education, it really is a measure of how good the public schools are. So it's not taking into consideration things like proximity to a good private school or affordability of those private schools. So it's looking at if you're going to have kids and they're going to be in the public schools here, how are those public schools performing? So we looked at basically a combination of standardized test scores and graduation rates for 2012 seniors.
So you're really ranking things the way that you've ranked them in the past. It's just, as we said earlier on, we're grouping them differently. Ben Doody's here from Connecticut Magazine. Their brand new issue that rates the towns is out very, very soon. As a matter of fact, some of it online right now at ConnecticutMag.com. And you can find more at WNPR.org. And the actual magazine will hit the newsstands very soon as well. But I think the grouping of these towns is what really changes things up. So let's go through things. The first grouping is actually not done this way. It's ranking the cities. And you've grouped the cities together in the state because I assume the cities in your mind are just different than all these other smaller communities.
Yeah, John, we wanted to make as close as we could to an apples-to-apples comparison in as many places as we could. We looked at the top eight cities in terms of population, and it's not just about population. It's about other factors that sort of lead you to feel like you're in a city: population density, a place being an economic center for a region, and so forth. So the eight cities are Stamford, Norwalk. I'm reading, you know, in the order that we actually ranked them are Stamford, Norwalk, Danbury, New Haven, Hartford, Bridgeport, New Britain, and Waterbury.
Okay, and Stanford comes out at top in these rankings, and tell me something about why Stanford ranks so well before we move on.
Sure. So, that's kind of overstating the obvious, but I'll preface all this by saying, first of all, we're well aware this is an inexact science. And we're also well aware, and the reason that in the magazine we break out, we list the ranking in each category is we understand that different categories are going to be more important to different people. The reason Stamford came out on top in the cities, though, it had the lowest crime rate of any major city. It had the best local economy of any major city. And we also ranked it second in culture leisure, so only behind New Haven. The big thing here is crime and economy. And another thing that you'll see in the magazine, we have kind of a sister story by Jennifer Swift called Cities at a Crossroad that looks at sort of where each of these cities are compared to where they were, say, 10 years ago and kind of where they're going. One thing that's interesting about Stamford, it's the fastest growing city in the state population-wise. I lived there for a couple of years, and it's amazing how much new housing is going up, particularly in the South End and Stamford along the waterfront. I lived in a new high-rise building that was built about 3 years ago, lived there for 2 years, and two other buildings went up in the 2 years that I lived there pretty much right next door.
A little bit later on the show, we might talk with David Fink of the Partnership for Strong Communities about how much affordable housing actually is in the mix in a place like Stamford. But let's continue on and move into some of the smaller communities here. And if you want to join us, 860-275-7266, these rating the towns issues, do they mean anything to you? What do you look for in a town? Are you actually looking at the median home price? So you've grouped them now based on the first grouping is home prices up to $175,000, essentially. So these are really, Ben, the cheapest towns where you can live in Connecticut, if I'm reading this right. And the town that comes out on the top is the little town up near me in the northwest corner, the town of Colebrook. This is a very, very small community with a median home sale price of around $135,000.
Yeah, John, and it's interesting, too. One of the things we did is we actually took cost of living, which had been in the formula for the ratings, out of the formula. And the reason we did that is we're comparing relatively similar cost of living. But just for sort of for clarity's sake, we list the price of a median home next to the ranking. And it's not always the case that you might think that the highest median home price would directly correlate with things like low crime, good economy, and so forth. And you look at Colebrook, it's in a group of towns up to basically almost up to 175,000 median home price. And median home price of 135 is actually at the lower end of that list. But Colebrook came out on top because it had the lowest crime rate in the group, and it also had the best public schools in the group.
And I know that up in the northwest corner, there's some talk about whether or not the Colebrook schools and the Norfolk schools are going to be working more closely together. That's something that's going to be interesting to see whenever you take a look at these rankings. Other towns that did well in the rankings of these more affordable communities, Cornwall, Westbrook, Thompson, North Stonington, Stafford, and Scotland, a few very, very small communities. Now, as you move up the list here, a median home sale price between $175,000 and $225,000. This gets into communities where the housing's a little bit more expensive. And the number one town here, also up in the northwest corner, Katie Tularsky's hometown of Barkhamsted, Connecticut. Barkhamsted rates very, very well here. Why does Barkhamsted take the top spot?
Yeah, it's actually a tie for the top spot with Union.
But I'm not going to say that because Barkhamsted is Katie Solarski's hometown. But anyway, please continue.
Well, if I had known that was Katie's hometown, we would have broken the tie in favor of Barkhamsted.
That's what I like to hear.
The top spot to itself. It's interesting. Crime and education are very big factors here. And if you look at Barkhamsted, it ranked third in the group out of 44 in crime, in education, I'm sorry, in fifth out of 44 in crime. It also was pretty good in economy. It had the 15th most robust local economy, and we rated it eighth in culture leisure. In Union's case, it ranked second in economy. It ranked actually 20th in education, but it was picked up by being ranked seventh in crime. And again, that number two spot in economy was a major driver.
And some other towns that do very, very well. Marlboro, the hometown of Tucker Ives, Woodstock, Southbury, Norfolk, and Middlefield. Now, as we move up the list here, $225,000 to $300,000, these are some communities that are considered to be some of the outer ring suburbs in both upstate and downstate Connecticut, some places that are a little bit more expensive. The town that comes out on the top is the town of Simsbury, followed by Glastonbury, Granby, Bridgewater, Goshen, and Durham. So do you think, Ben, that this grouping is sort of a representative of a list of a lot of the suburban communities that maybe were coming out higher on other rankings? I mean, what does this particular grouping tell you as you look at Simsbury at the top of this list?
Well, Simsbury comes in at a median home price of $280,000, so it's near the top of the list. This is one thing, and another reason why, you know, we want people to take these ratings seriously, but we also want to understand the complexity of it. Simsbury was not too far away from being grouped in the upper income group with, you know, the Greenwiches and the Westports of the world. Instead, it's in the second group, so it comes out with the number one education in this group, number one local economy. Glastonbury and Granby come in second and third. But Simsbury, certainly a lot of things going for it that the Fairfield County Fairfield County towns like Greenwich and Westport and New Canaan have going for it. But again, at $280,000, you can buy a home for less than a third of the price in Simsbury as you can, say, in New Canaan or Darien. So a lot more affordable.
We're going to get to some of your phone calls in a moment. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. What do you think about ranking towns this way? Have you heard your town ranked so far? And do you think that this is a fair way to do things based on median home price ranking these towns? 860-275-7266. Well, before our break, Ben, I got to ask you about this last group. So the final group is towns that are grouped by median home sale price of $300,000 and up. As you look down the list, you see towns like, say, Killingworth that has a median home price of $320,000, or the little town of Chester, $302,000. Up there in the ranking with places like Darien, New Canaan, and Greenwich, where the median home price is well over $1 million, one might fairly say that this is a bit too big a group, that really there's nothing comparative between Chester and, New Canaan. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that's a really fair criticism. It's one of the things that we thought about. I think, frankly, our next time around on these We might break off the upper income towns, sort of the towns that are not just top 1%, but the top 1/10 of 1% of income and of cost of living. We had to break this off somewhere. And that's why we divided into fairly even groups. One thing that's interesting is Ridgefield, which actually has less than half the median home price as Darien, ranks first in this group. Darien ranks second. And in our intro here, we note that it's not just that the places where there are million-dollar homes neatly fall into the top 1, 2, 3. Having said that, yeah, Darien and New Canaan, the towns, by the way, with median home values of more than $1 million are Darien, New Canaan, Greenwich, and Westport. And yeah, they all come out in the top seven. There's no question about it. And this is where we're acknowledging the complexity here and saying to readers, look, we want you to know that Westport has fantastic public schools and a great local economy. But we certainly understand that there are going to be folks who can afford to live in Orange, for instance, where the median home value is $340,000, and they can't necessarily afford to live in New Canaan and Darien.
So a last thing before we take the break. You say you want people to take this seriously, but sort of not too seriously. Anytime, though, you rank anything, especially a magazine called Connecticut Magazine, it seems as though you're setting up a competition between towns. You're setting up one town to be at the top of the list. And I haven't read the towns that are at the bottom of these lists. And somebody else looking at this saying, well, that can't be very good for our home value. How seriously should we take something like this, given the fact that we are essentially taking 169 communities and putting them in a pecking order that's pretty clear here?
Well, I think I'd compare this, if I can use a college basketball analogy, I'd compare it to RPI and college basketball. It's a general indicator of relative strength. It's not an absolute indicator of absolute strength. So we think there's enough data out there, and there are enough factors in there that we can say, yeah, because Ridgefield has a minuscule crime rate, a sky-high voter turnout rate, fantastic public schools, good local economy, we think that means something, and we think it deserves to stand out. That's not to say, though, that Monroe or Oxford or Trumbull, which are lower down on this list, don't have anything going for them.
We're talking with Ben Duty from Connecticut Magazine. When we come back, David Fink from the Partnership for Strong Communities will join the conversation. They have a brand new study that's out that's looking at the affordability of life here in Connecticut, whether or not there's enough affordable housing. As we talk about ranking the towns, you can join us, 860-275-7266. You can also find us online at WNPR.org. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking about a new edition of Connecticut Magazine, which rates the towns. It's changed its rating the towns section to group towns based on average home price as opposed to population. Even though it seems though there are some towns where you can afford to live more cheaply in the state, there's a new report by the Partnership for Strong Communities that shows Connecticut is still a very expensive place to live, one that needs more affordable housing. Joining Ben Duty from Connecticut Magazine now is David Fink. He's policy director for the Partnership for Strong Communities. Good to see you again, David. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
Before we dig into your study, you've been listening into the first part of our conversation. What do you think, when we rank towns based on things like median home sales price, I mean, what does this tell you? Does it paint a picture of a Connecticut where it's affordable to live, not affordable to live? What's your thoughts?
We know that it's not affordable for a lot of people to live in. Having said that, I think that the Connecticut Magazine ratings are really interesting, and I think that they're valid. But I do think that there's an interesting phenomenon that you have to get to around these numbers, which is these numbers are based on the first 6 months of 2013, the home values. And what we've seen around the state is that there's a huge demographic wave confronting the state and the economy. So between economics and demographics, you have a lot of people looking to buy homes on the lower end of the spectrum. Everything $300,000 and under is selling, and those homes with prices over $300,000 are not selling as well. And the reasons for that are pretty interesting. Number one, with baby boomers, and I'm part of that group, what you find if you look at numbers, say, from the Employee Benefit Research Institute, which does a lot of the pension calculations for private industry, is that 56% of all workers and 54% of retirees have less than $25,000 in the bank.
Mm.
Those people – and that's a surprising number to a lot of people. But what you find is that if you don't have a lot of money in the bank and you're a baby boomer and your house is paid for – you're thinking about, I'm not sure I'm going to have enough money to replace the roof if it goes, or the boiler. And so you want to downsize. There's huge demographic pressure to downsize from that group. So they're either buying or renting what they can at lower prices. Same time, people coming out of college and graduate school now have an average debt of about $25,000, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Those people are not qualifying for mortgages. And if they do, they don't really have a lot of money for down payment. So they're looking to rent and have something smaller. So the whole market, pushed by the economy and demographics, is looking to buy or rent smaller, denser, more affordable. And that's why if you looked, I think quite logically, at the first 6 months of 2013 and the sales that you saw from the Warren Group, people are buying smaller, lower price places, and that would tend to drive down the median sales price because they're only measuring the median sales price of those homes that sold.
Mm. And does that sound about right, Ben, that maybe we're seeing this impact in the rankings that you're talking about here with these Warren Group numbers?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, our median home sales price is not part of the equation. It's just the way that we're grouping these towns.
Grouping the towns.
I think you'd probably end up with very similar groupings, even if those Warren Group numbers were a little bit different. But sure, it's an interesting thing to point out for sure.
If the numbers were higher, you'd still basically be falling to the same groups as what you're saying.
Exactly.
Damien's calling from Avon. Hi, Damien. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a comment about the looking at the rankings based on median home price. It seems that the higher the median home price, especially with the one-tenth of 1%, you're looking at a much higher level of discretionary income, lower savings, which can result in boons to the local economy, greater revenue for the town, which translates into better schools, all kind of a self-perpetuating prophecy, which will enable these towns to maintain a competitive edge. And this kind of ranking primarily based on income and revenue can almost help to suppress those lower income, lower generating towns.
Mm-hmm. Damien, thank you very much for your phone call. And I know, David Fink, this is something we've been sort of following throughout the course of our entire time on the air here and that you've been following for years, too. This thing that Damien talks about is that when you have towns that are richer, you tend to then have towns that are richer. It accrues back to the community. Maybe talk about that phenomenon in Connecticut as we try to roll out some of the numbers that you're talking about here with your new report. The fact is that some communities are just better off. It might mean that it's a lot harder for people of lower means to actually live there.
Right. Well, I think that's true. Obviously, if you can't afford a home in a certain town, you can't live there and avail yourselves of the good schools and the good services there. But things are changing, John, and that's really the interesting part of this. Because of those demographic pressures, we're hearing from towns that we never heard from before, upper-income towns that are looking to create more affordable housing. Again, for their baby boomers who want to downsize, for young professionals that they want now to come to their towns. And the reason is that all the old people don't volunteer for the fire department and they don't volunteer to sit on the Inland Wetlands Board. And they need volunteers for all those things and for the Little League. Plus, the public school age population in the state, 5 to 19 years old, is plummeting. It is expected to be down 9.9% by 2025, and that's only bucked up and held up by the cities, which tend to have people of lower median age and higher birth rate. But a lot of towns, Westport, Ben mentioned before, Westport is projected to see its school-age population drop by 34% between now and 2025. Mm. So one fear that a lot of these towns had in building more housing was that they were going to get more families and more school children. It was going to increase the school budget and increase taxes. Well, That was never really a legitimate fear, but now it's really not a legitimate fear because those towns will have plenty of room in their classrooms if they have young families move in. So that's what's happening. People will have access to more of these towns because more of these towns are creating more density because, as I said, their older residents who've lived there for 30 or 35 years want to stay there close to their friends and their church and everything, and then they want young people to move in.
Now, one thing you did mention, though, just to be clear, though, Ben Doody is ranking at the Connecticut Magazine. One of the rankings is based on civic engagement. Those towns with older populations, they may not have people doing the volunteer firefighting, but they do go out and vote. I mean, that is one thing that an older population does tend to do. They tend to be more civically engaged. They vote as opposed to a younger population.
Right. And the problem in a lot of those towns is when they want to change things and they want to increase the budget, they find that older people who are on fixed incomes and whose kids are out of school
already paid for their house.
Right.
They're just worried about taxes.
They tend not to want to vote for an increased budget, even though if they thought a little more broadly, they'd recognize that the value of their property and the quality of their life is dependent on a budget that really supports the town. So but now you're going to have people with kids in the schools moving to some of these places and younger people who are going to be more engaged in the community. It's going to be a very interesting change in towns in the state.
If you want to join us to talk about how much housing costs in our state, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. If you've seen things moving in a more positive direction as you're looking for property or maybe even a place to rent, you can also email us wherewelive@wnpr.org. Coming up, we'll be playing the Partnership for Strong Communities rent roulette game, a way that you can try to see what it might cost to rent an apartment in a variety of different places around the state. So let's take a look at the big picture of what you've rolled out here last week, David. Obviously, we know Connecticut's an expensive place to live. We know from talking to you in the past that you believe there needs to be more affordable housing. So talk about what it is you've exactly found, and what do we really mean by affordable housing anyway?
Okay, affordable housing, just to take people down to the basics, you and I, when we got our first apartments, our folks told us don't spend more than 25% of your income on housing. HUD puts it at 30%. So affordable housing for someone making 100% of the median income is someone not spending more than 30% of that income on housing. And so for a poor person, not spending more than 30% of that, you know, lower income person's income. So that's what affordable housing is. And obviously, it's different levels at for different income levels. The problem in the state, and this goes to rankings, too, is that of the 169 cities and towns, the housing stock is affordable, guaranteed affordable, because there are deed restrictions and it limits the amount of housing in only 31 of the 169 cities and towns. So that means that 138 of those towns don't have much affordable housing at all. And what that means is that people can't move to those towns and avail themselves of those school districts and greater services, the weekend soccer, the farmer's market, all the really nice things that a lot of these towns have. But what we're seeing are, as I said, are changes. First of all, you're going to see big changes in cities like Hartford, Meriden, New Haven because of the Springfield to New Haven rail line. I believe that the CT Fast Track is going to make a big difference in New Britain. What we've already seen in the census numbers is that people are moving into the cities, not just in Connecticut, but across the country. People want to be close to walkable communities. They want to be near transit, especially younger people. So, I'm not saying we're like Paris yet, where all the rich people live in the city and all the poor people live outside. But I think there is a move to town centers and close to walkable transit neighborhoods.
Connecticut, we're not Paris yet. It's actually came in second, just behind Still Revolutionary. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. You mentioned Meriden, actually. Ben Doody, on your ranking of the towns in which the median home sales price is up to $175,000, Meriden, I will say, comes in dead last on this list. And that can't be particularly good for the people of Meriden. But that said, David Fink is talking about this this high-speed rail line that's supposed to be coming through that would link Meriden in a way that it's never been linked before. Do you think in the future you look at something like the availability of public transportation as a way to maybe say, okay, Meriden's a slightly better place to live than this ranking is showing?
Yeah, that's a great point, John. And that's there's not a public transportation component to this, in part because outside of Fairfield County right now, there's just not a whole lot of it. So if we did, and we certainly might look at this in the future, if we looked at the accessibility to public transportation right now, for instance, just about everybody in Fairfield County on the Metro North line is super, you know, successful in that. And then just about all these towns that we're looking at in the a town like Colebrook or Barkhamsted that are close to the Massachusetts
super
line.
Super not accessible.
Just, you know, it's you can't get there. So that's certainly something. And another thing I'll just throw out here, John. One of the other things that we've done differently in the Rating Towns issue this year is we have five additional features aside from just the ratings. And we get into some of this stuff. We have a feature on Hartford. We have Jen's feature on Stamford. Jen Swift also has a story on New Haven. This stuff is complex. Public transportation certainly is one of the many things that goes into the equation. And, next time we do this, could there be a public transportation component? Absolutely. And could Meriden, jump up 5 to 10 spots in the rankings because of that? Sure.
And it's not a small thing. I mean, a town, David Fink, like Colebrook, that does very well in these rankings, it is indeed fairly isolated, but it has a lot of what you would need in a community. It doesn't have a big grocery store right there. You really do have to hop in a car if you drive someplace. Do you think that moving forward, Connecticut is going to be taking more seriously this idea of building around transit, of actually trying to make these more walkable, more dense communities a bit more attractive?
Yeah, because I think that the market will demand it. I think it's demanding it, as we said, among this huge group of baby boomers. And I don't want to undersell that. But by 2030, we're going to have a 50% increase from 2010 in the number of people 65 and older. And they're all living till 90, or at least I hope to live till 90. The point is that those people with lots of buying power want to be in the town centers and they want to be connected. If our economy is going to grow at all, it's going to grow with young people moving here. They want to live, and as we said earlier, won't be able to live anywhere but a rental unit near transit. Now, here's the key about this. Overall, 32% of every household budget is housing. That's the housing expense. 19% on transportation. That's the next largest part. So that's 51% in total. But if you live near transit, it's only 9%. That 10 percentage points is huge. It's a lot more buying power for any of those households. The problem today in Connecticut is that 2 out of 5 households spend more than 30% of their income on housing. So that's bad for them. They don't have much left over for food, clothing, transportation, health care. But it's bad for the whole state's economy, because when you have so many people spending so much on that one important part of their budget, they don't have much left over for other things. And that reduces the growth in small business creation and so many other things.
And to be clear, it's not just people who are at the very bottom of the income level in the state who are spending more than 30% on housing. There's an awful lot of people who would fall into the vast middle, people who have fairly expensive homes, who are spending, frankly, too much on their house to live in a nice town.
Yeah, and a place like Colebrook, if you have to spend 32% of your income on housing, but you also have to spend a lot of money on gasoline at $4 a gallon, the demand for housing in Colebrook is not going to go up, and prices, I think, frankly, will flatten in places like that. Whereas when we have the Springfield to New Haven Rail Line, CT Fast Track, Shoreline East, Metro North, and a capillary of connecting bus systems, you're going to wind up having about 60 towns in the state that will be connected transportation-wise. Those are the towns that will be in demand.
Let's go to Tim in Portland. Hi there, Tim. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hello. Yes, I have a question regarding the affordability of housing in our Gold Coast communities, and it seems largely all 134 of the 169 communities do not have affordable housing. And as the panelist was laying out that problem of filling, emptying classrooms and hoping to attract younger people, who are those people that can afford to move in? And so it would seem that those communities not only have to raise their taxes to make their education stellar, but they also have to build affordable housing to bring people in who could support an enlarged tax base, while making the argument to the older people, look, the education system is the key to your home value. But I just comment on the politics of that, the feasibility of that. It's clear that there's not going to be white flight like there was historically, because those people don't want to go anywhere but where they are. Well, there we are.
Tim, thank you very much for your phone call. David?
No, it's a really good point. The problem with the Gold Coast communities are that those people are in, they've got their home, they like it there, and they don't want to see it change. And they've not taken the opportunity to create more affordable housing. Fairfield, for instance, over the last decade, created 619 units of housing, and none of them are affordable. Now, Fairfield has begun to see the light. They just got a Home Connecticut grant, and they're looking to create it. Where do you create it? You create it in places that don't mess up neighborhoods and otherwise get the residents upset about where you're going to do it. So a good place to do it is in the town center or near the train station. Milford is doing this. We just talked to Greenwich. They're doing it. Some towns are outliers. Darien, not interested. But places like Richfield and Brookfield and Bethel up the Danbury line there, they're looking to do it. I mean, towns are feeling the pressure not from outside but from inside their own residents.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about homelessness in Connecticut, obviously a huge problem and something that they're taking a look at the Partnership for Strong Communities. We're also joined by Ben Duty from Connecticut Magazine. Luther tweets us, "My sources in real estate tell me that luxury homes, particularly along Shoreline, aren't moving very well." If you want to join us, tell us how you think the housing market's doing, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, one out of every three women in the U.S. deliver their babies by cesarean section. Back in 1965, that number was less than 5%. This change has added billions to the cost of childbirth in the U.S., and the World Health Organization says it might be putting women's health at risk. We will talk with the author of a new book about what she is calling the C-section epidemic in America. That's tomorrow's conversation. You can join us here on Where We Live and online at WNPR.org. Today we're talking with Ben Duty from Connecticut Magazine, David Fink from the Partnership for Strong Communities, about housing in Connecticut, what it costs and what it means for the various towns across our state. You can join us at 860-275-7266. I want to bring in Lisa Tepper-Bates, who's Executive Director of the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness, though, to talk about something very, very important, rapid rehousing for the homeless. And Lisa, welcome to the show, first of all.
Well, thank you very much for having me, John.
I know from David Fink's report that the problem of homelessness in our state continues to be worse and worse, 10% rise in homelessness since 2010. So tell us about the idea of rapid rehousing and what it can do for people.
Well, I will. I'm glad to have the opportunity. And let me note as well that when we talk about rapid rehousing, one of the primary groups that this intervention can help are families who are homeless. And from 2010 to 2013, we have seen the number of families in shelter in Connecticut increase by 16%, John. So it's important that we have some tools to address especially that need. And when we say rapid rehousing, what that means is helping those who have become homeless and are in shelter to return to permanent housing quickly. And the assistance that we provide usually means security deposit, first month's rent. So rather than having people sitting in shelter and sort of scraping together one penny at a time, we're helping them with that upfront capital cost that it takes to get into permanent housing. And, John, it's an important intervention because it's actually more cost-effective than keeping people in shelter longer. It also allows us to serve more people who need shelter with the existing stock of shelter that we have in the state. And that's important because we have actually seen what is a disturbing increase in families who are going without shelter, without adequate shelter, homeless and without a place to have their children sleep at night. So by using this intervention of rapid rehousing, we're helping people get out of shelter and into permanent housing quickly. Note, though, to your point,
yes,
this is not the same as affordable housing. When we rapidly rehouse people, it's usually to what exists in the market.
Well, and that's really my main question here is when we're talking about rehousing people in an unaffordable market, and I'll just quickly have David Fink pick up on this, what are we talking about here? It is obviously good work to be able to help people get back on their feet and try to provide a first month's rent, but when the places that are out there in the market are too expensive, it just seems to be a self-perpetuating cycle, David.
Yeah, it's expensive to do it. I mean, Lisa and the providers who help people who need rapid rehousing are doing the best they can. But we don't have enough supply of rental housing in the state. We're 50th in the nation over the last decade in units built per capita. We haven't built much housing at all. And the housing we've built is not the housing we need, very little rental housing. And this all comes at a time when the demand for rental housing is up. It's 33.1%. It was only 30% in 2006, a 10% increase. So we have all this demand and not enough supply, and it makes Lisa's job much harder.
Yeah, so Lisa, what do we do about this? I mean, obviously, this is a huge problem as you try to get people settled back into a stable situation when there's just not the affordability piece put together here.
Well, that's exactly right. And as David said, we don't have the kind of housing we need for our lowest income workers in this state. And that's a real problem. But John, I would say there are two questions. In the first order of business, we need to help people to not be homeless. And in the second order of business, we need to help them to have stable lives where they're not paying so much in rent every single month that they can't possibly save for a crisis. And we do know that while people do tend to hold on pretty well once rapidly rehoused, that does not mean it's an affordable or a stable situation. It means they're not homeless, and that's one good step. But we do need to provide those families and those single individuals with the housing that they can afford.
And that means, David, in your mind, building more housing that is affordable. Connecticut ranking 50th in units built per capita between 2003 and 2012. Essentially, we're just not building the right kind of housing here.
Right. But as I say, I think the pressures of the market are going to create more. All I can say, and I don't want to make this sound too partisan, but thank God for Governor Malloy and the General Assembly, because they get it, and they have supported a great deal of new housing creation in the state. And I hope that continues. The towns are beginning to figure out how to zone for it. You got to create more density to create more housing. And towns are figuring out proactively that they can find locations in their towns where they can do higher density housing without the people in the town freaking out. And that's really the issue.
Lisa, before I let you go, David gives a shout out to the governor and the legislature. If from the standpoint of trying to help the homeless in the state, what's one thing you would ask them to do that perhaps they have not done for you?
Well, first up, I would second what David has said. We're lucky to have a governor who is focused on the issue of housing. It's been a long time that Connecticut has needed this leadership, and we're grateful to him for that. And I would say that what we would most ask is for all the tools across the toolbox. We need to build more affordable housing, but we do need to keep rapidly rehousing people out of shelter as best we can. So we need to work on all fronts, and I'd appreciate the governor's support in that effort, and I think we have it.
Lisa Tepper-Bates is Executive Director of the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness. Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're taking your emails, wherewelive@wnpr.org, your tweets at wherewelive. Paul sends us an email. One issue you haven't addressed is the increase in the disparity in housing prices over the years. I'm a Norwalk native who purchased a house in New Britain 30 years ago to be near where I work. At that time, the housing price differential was about 25%. A comparable house in Norwalk would cost about 25% more than one in New Britain. Today, the difference is in the 300% range. Now that I'm retired, I'm not in a position to sell my New Britain house and move back to Norwalk. David, this is something he brings up, and that huge disparity is really at play here. You see it in the numbers that Ben Doody puts out in the Connecticut Magazine, and you see it in your report.
Well, you know, obviously, and it goes to what Connecticut Magazine's ratings go to, the quality of life in Norwalk offers more. You have access to transit. You have access to New York City. There are more services in Norwalk, and so it's a more valued place to live. I would argue, and I think still in a minority, that New Britain values are going to come increase, because I think that the availability of transit in New Britain is going to be huge, and it's going to help the town. But it's going to be a long way toward closing that gap. It's not going to close that quickly.
Well, let's talk a little bit about rental housing in the last couple minutes we have yet. We got a tweet from This One Is Broken. I work in Newtown but can't afford to live there. Found a place in Naugatuck for $650 plus utilities. Cheap but still too expensive. You have up a new online game. It's called Rent Roulette, David. Just give us an outline of what exactly it is you do if you go on there.
You go on, you choose the location, you choose your income level, and you choose the price that you can pay. And it's kind of a fun game. It helps you understand what it costs to live in different places in the state. We created it as a way of opening the conversation with different groups. But it is really a lot of fun. Susan Campbell on our staff, the communications director, did a fine job with a teacher at Manchester Community College at Hogan, and they created the game, and it's really fun. Our website is www.pschousing.org. I'd invite everybody to go on and play Rent and Roulette.
When you go on there, I mean, what is it that you're finding? You're essentially finding that in a lot of towns, you're not able to find rental housing for that less than 30% magic number.
That's right. And what it means is, and you begin to say, oh my gosh, I'm going to pay 40 or 50% of my income to live where I want to live. Well, fine, but that means you're going to eat a lot of mac and cheese every night.
Well, yeah, and of course you eat a lot of mac and cheese and also not really do anything for yourself aside from pay somebody else for rent. At least still in this post-collapse market, Ben Duty, there is still value in owning your home and building some equity over time. I know that your rankings are really based on home value, meaning that a lot of people are going to be buying their homes, but it doesn't really take into account renting a home. And renting a home is what a whole lot of people have to do in Connecticut. Is that something else you might consider doing?
Yeah, that's an instance where we kept the formula kind of the way we had in terms of cost of living. But there's no question. I mean, I rent in Fairfield. I had just rented in Stamford. That's probably an interesting comparison. I'm renting a house in Fairfield and paying less than I was to rent a one-bedroom apartment in Stamford. So to kind of circle back to what I brought up at the beginning of the show, in Stamford, there's a ton of new rental housing. A lot of it is fairly expensive, but it's filling up. I mean, it's interesting. The population is swelling, and you have people who are paying to rent in Stamford. It's still cheaper than renting in New York, which is another reason I think you're seeing an increase in the population, an increase of sort of young people living in Stamford.
Well, and that is a difference when we talk about the Gold Coast or Fairfield County. We're talking about really competing with Manhattan prices or Brooklyn prices as opposed to necessarily the rest of Connecticut. But you talked, David, in just the last minute or so that we have here about hopefully the market pressures driving these costs down. But when we see new apartments coming online in a place like Stamford or in a place like Hartford where people really want folks to live in the downtown area, it's a lot of more expensive housing. Where is that housing for young people who maybe want to live that life and can't afford it?
Well, it's coming. Like I said, it's coming in other places. But I think, you know, the commuter rail is an important thing for people to focus on in the end here. You're going to be able to live in not just New Haven, but North Haven and Wallingford and Meriden and still be able to get to New York City in well under 2 hours. If you talk to people in New York City, people are commuting from New Jersey and upstate New York for 2 hours. So those markets are going to expand once people figure out that commuter rail is going to help. I mean, Stamford, there's still not enough supply for the demand, as we're seeing. And, you know, economics 101 is, you know, you got to have the supply.
Well, I want to thank our guests for coming in today, and I'll let people know that if you go to WNPR.org and check out our page, we're going to have links to the Rent Roulette game, and we're going to have links to this study by the partnership. David Fink is here, Policy Director at the Partnership for Strong Communities. Always good to see you, David. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, John.
And thanks also to Ben Duty, who's Managing Editor at Connecticut Magazine and many of the other sister publications for, I believe it's called 21st Century Media now. You guys change your name all the time. Thank you so much, Ben, for coming in, and if people want to see this Connecticut Magazine new Rating the Towns issue, is it out on the newsstand soon?
Yeah, it'll be out in the newsstands later this week and also up this week at ConnecticutMag.com. So you can see a detailed breakdown also of all the numbers that we've used to crunch this stuff. So you can sort numbers however you want at ConnecticutMag.com.
You can also join us at WNPR.org if you want to see some of those links as well. Our program is produced by Tucker Ives with Betsy Kaplan and Heather Brandon. The senior producer is Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankowski, and this is Where We Live.